Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
All right.
Hey.
Welcome back, everyone.
How's your summer been?
Really hot, really sweaty, and I want summer to be over.
Aww.
We've had like a week of a full week of over 100s every day.
Oh, shit. Yeah. And you work outside, don't you, dude?
Yeah.
You're boned.
Yeah, I've been pretty much living on water and Gatorade.
Oh my god. Ugh.
Yeah. It's rough.
Yeah, it sounds it. Oh my god.
I make it through.
Yeah. But still. Oh my gosh.
I know. So, I know that you're going to Gen Con. Sad face, I won't be going to Gen Con this year.
Yeah, and depending on what happens, this might be the only time we go to Gen Con.
Well, we'll see. I'm hoping that next year I can go.
I hope so too, but, well, we don't know what, depending on what happens and the intensity and what have you, but...
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, that's why we do these things. And talk about them, because, you know, you never know.
Yep, and you're prepping for dog days?
Yes. I'm still hemming and hawing, so, yes. And for our one patron, I'm going to say this now, you will be getting shows every single day. You will not be charged for every single day.
Yeah, only don't freak out.
Seize the GM episodes will get your tag. Getting charged. Just like when you got the interview episodes from when we were at Origins, I didn't charge those. So, yeah. So Eric, don't worry about it. You're going to be getting a lot of stuff in your feed every day. They're going to be short. That's why I'm not charging those, like, because that would just be outrageous. And I'm not doing that to people.
I mean, we're jerks, but we're not that type of jerks.
Yeah, no, not at all. So, I figured that, you know, with dog days coming up, I'm going to try to do as many shows as I can. Every day, just stay on it as long as I can and as hard as I can, because I'm going to be doing some more world building stuff specific to the game that I'm going to be, well, that I am running right now. So it'll give me every day where I'm doing anywhere between 5 and 15 minutes of game design every single day.
It's going to be fun.
Hopefully they come out pretty good, and talking about different elements and aspects that I want to incorporate and include. So yeah, that's what I'm going to be working on. What are you going to be doing?
I've been going back and forth on maybe reviews of stuff, games. Pyre just dropped. It's from Supergiant Games, and I love those guys. So, but I'm thinking like, nah, no one wants to hear me rant on or compliment video game. And it's just going through, I'm having all these ideas, and then my brain is like, smack, stop being stupid. I'm like, oh, God. It's yeah, like, I want to do this and my brain is being a dick.
It happens. It happens to the best of us.
So I hope, but it's the, you know, it's...
Yeah, well, I'll be listening every day, so...
Yeah, I'm going to do my absolute best, but here's hoping.
Yeah, well, that's all you can do. I think it's going to be fun.
I want to try to make ridiculous.
I'm going to try to make it fun instead of like trying to just hammer stuff out every day. So if I get a little bit of extra time to work on something, I'm going to work on it and have stuff for the next day or 2 or 3 days. So that's my hope.
Nice, nice, nice.
Yeah. And I'm also going to start working on writing. This is probably going to really start to ramp up after Dog Days. But I am going to be writing an adventure series for Pathfinder.
Awesome. That'll be cool.
So it's going to be a bit of the classic D&D idea of here's some of the cool things in the world and a little bit about some of the histories and some of the other stuff. So that's kind of what it's going to be. And when I get enough, like an adventure or two done, they're probably going to be, the first ones are going to be standalone, and then I'm going to start working on putting them together into kingdom locations and start writing out kingdom books.
Oh, that's going to be cool.
So, yeah.
That's going to be fun.
If I get enough kingdom books written and enough interest draw to that, then I will probably be putting together a full setting book at some point.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
So, yeah, anybody that's interested in that sort of thing, once I start writing, I will let people know where they can get a hold of stuff. And I'm thinking about doing the first adventure is free. And then going from there. So, yeah.
Well, we'll see where it goes. We'll see where it goes.
Yep. So, but yeah, that's what I'm going to be doing for quite a while. But where are we going to draw all this inspiration for all these things we need to work on?
And drugs are illegal, people. I know where your mind went.
Are.
All right. So, no. Legitimately. You know,
legitimately,
there's books, YouTube videos, you know, music. But right now, the main of our media, movies.
Movies. Yeah. I don't want to do, like, you know, you may have TV series, but those are different. Those are a different animal, and those mm-hmm. are telling long form story.
Mm-hmm. Unless they're, you know, like Dark Mirror, where none of the episodes have anything in common with each other aside from near future dystopia. That's all it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's not really... That's still a series, and there's going to be something at some point. That's kind of what is the show? Twilight Zone.
Yes.
You know, it's episodic.
Yeah, and none of the episodes, works. But they're still under the same kind of a series umbrella. But, you know, movies, they have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and unless there's a lot of sequels, that's it. That's your lot.
Yeah, and I don't think any of my movies have sequels. Well, one does, but I don't really consider the sequels part of the same series. So.
Well, direct-to-video sequels, I really don't consider sequels.
Right.
All right, so what do you have? What are your movies?
Okay, so I just picked three kind of series-like types of movies because... That's kind of how I break most of these down. So I have a horror, which is The Descent. I have one that's fantasy, which I'm going to talk about. And when you first hear the title, you're going to be like, what? That's not fantasy. But it's Dark City.
That's a dark fairy tale set in space. It fits.
Uh-huh. And the last one is a sci-fi movie that I just saw, and it's so good, is Valerian.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, my God. It is so good.
If you
so
give me
good.
Spoilers, I am going to beat you to death with a wet noodle.
I will not, but I will talk about some of the amazing elements of it.
Works for me, buddy.
So. Okay, so what do you got?
All right. One, I really don't know how to genre this thing, but I have The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Okay.
For fantasy / myth, I have Kubo of the Two Strings.
I have not seen that yet.
Music. I love it.
Yeah.
And the last one, I'm doing this as an action one, is The Good, the Bad, and the Weird.
Okay. Okay. Again, a movie I have not seen yet.
Well, this is going to be fun then, ain't it? We're going to have to try and really do this well. But since we each respect each other and actually are friends, you know, and don't hate each other, we're going to try and do our best not to do spoilers.
Well, to some degree. Some of my movies, and I'm okay with spoilers.
There's spoilers and then there's spoilers. I mean, saying like there's art, you know, certain things, but like in certain movies, like in Baron Munchausen and The Good and the Bad and the Weird, there are very specific aspects and certain twists.
Right.
You don't spoil that
Valerian?
Shit.
There's a reason why I'm not going to have any spoilers. And that is because Valerian is still in the theaters. It is only in its first week.
Uh-huh.
So
it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
All right. So why don't we try and all right. Instead of just like top to bottom, pick the one that kind of kicks you, like grabs you by the face and like, you will watch me. Which one does that one to you the most? Start with that one.
Well,
go for it.
I'm going to have to go with Valerian because I literally just watched it like this weekend. And it was a movie that I thought looked interesting. And it is I don't want to say perfectly paced movie, but it is as close as I have ever seen. It is action-oriented, but still hits all of those like emotional points that you would expect in a good story.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, there is a thing that happens, and then something else happens shortly after, and it's just like, the story keeps moving. There is a beginning, middle, and end, and there's, you know where the end is. And
I mean, it sounds like also the way you were describing it, I mean, before we started the show, was the visual aesthetics of how they put this movie together actually reinforce the story. It's not sparkly for sparkly. It's not actiony and explodey for actiony and explodey. The way that it's shot, the way that it's framed, if it's, you know, they'll shoot in a way that if it is a certain thing you want to feel claustrophobic, it makes you feel claustrophobic.
Yes.
But if they wanted to give you that epic of, oh, I'm a little too far away, but this is, it's still impactful. How they frame a shot, you know, visually reinforces that part of the story. And you said that you hadn't seen something like that before.
It was one of the things I said while we were still sitting there very, very early in the movie, I looked over at my wife and I said, the next time I run anything science fiction, I have to own this movie so that I can watch it and cherry pick the elements that I want out of it.
Oh gosh, Zippy does that too. Like
because there are so many wonderful little bits all throughout the entire movie that you can cherry pick bits and pieces and make a great story, even out of things that aren't part of the main story.
Mm-hmm.
That's how well it's done.
And that's, you know, that's the best thing about it, is if it's that good, you can take it as a whole, but elements and that you can nick for your own story, that's something, because that's going to stick with you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It really is. And that's, see, there's a second reason why I can't give too many spoilers, and that is that Charles in our Facebook group, when I said I was going to see this, he goes, "You have to tell me about it." And I was like, "Not a problem." But I'm not going to spoil anything because it's something that has to be experienced. That's how good it is. If you can get to see it on the big screen, go see it on the big screen. If you can see it in 3D, I did not see it in 3D, but I bet it is amazing in 3D.
Zippy gets motion sickness. I will not be able to do that.
That is a shame. Yeah. So, which one grabs you out of yours?
It depends, actually. You know, for me, though, it's going to sound strange, but The Good, the Bad, and the Weird.
Okay.
You know, it's not as deep as, you know, as your movie sounds. But the thing that I like about it is it has a good story, but it's not, I like the story. It's neat. It's a train robbery. There's, the police officer going after, there's wanted posters. The thing is, though, that this movie was made in South Korea. But they have Chinese, Korean, and Japanese actors all in the same movie, which is awesome. And there's three languages occasionally being spoken, which is kind of neat. You know, aww. I like that. You know, so you'll hear people. I'm like, that's cool. I like that. But here's the thing that's kind of neat is the story is, you know, you have like a police officer / bounty hunter type person. Okay. And he's looking for criminals, and he comes across, there's this big train robbery, and there's a bungling thief, and a really, really good kind of like member of, oh God, like notorious, horrible, like super nasty gang. And they're robbing the train at the same time. So, you know, so it's that kind of a thing on setup. So what ends up happening is the bungler steals a treasure map. All right. And, you know, it's him and his brother, and the train robbery was originally done so, you know, the super nasty bad guy could get the map. And it's this weird treasure map. And then this police officer is looking to arrest these guys, and, you know, more stuff comes out. But the thing is, like, none of it feels like it's thrown in there just to make it interesting. It's like, no, they actually, all the characters are played perfectly like that. And, you know, there were hints all throughout, like, the movie about, you know, how the quest gets kind of sidetracked a little bit. And, you know, it's beautifully done. There's Western mixed with a kung fu flick. But the thing that I like is they have these really high action moments, and they're beautifully done, and they're, you know, they're cinematic, and the camera work is beautiful, and there's not a lot of CGI. These people are actually doing like crazy ass shit on top of a train and stuff. But afterwards, okay. It's not, you know, shifting to a couple days later, except, you know, at a couple parts, but it's okay after this, and one dude gets captured, and he's with the police guy, and it's right after this big fight where he got captured. And it's like, you know, they got the capture in the afternoon, and this is dinner time, and they're sitting there talking, you know, and it's the most interesting use of bringing the action down in a way that develops the characters that doesn't rob who you saw doing all this action stuff. It's usually don't get that in action movies. They're almost like jump cuts and it's jarring. But these, it's just like, okay, you see the guy get arrested, and then in the next scene, they're sitting having dinner, and that energy from the fight's still kind of there, but it's wearing off, you know?
Okay.
And it was a beautiful way for character development, just it what you know, through just the atmosphere, you know, or how a guy actually goes to sleep. You know, if you're kind of like in this, yes, it's in Korea, but in this kind of like Wild West almost kind of feel, how you slept. So one guy, you know, he's sleeping, you know, showing his back to his captor. He doesn't care. He's not afraid. But it's these little bits. And I pick up on them, I'm like, oh, really subtle character development if you watch.
Okay.
But the action is just off the wall. And there is the world's most perfect example of ninja ripped in this movie. I am not kidding. You know, and I'll be honest, one of the actors, if you want to know how to play a perfect fear-inducing psychopath, not sociopath, but psychopath, he nails it. And the actor normally is just this happy, funny, like laughy dude. And you just, you know, and then knowing that and then seeing him pull that off, amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Pick a next one, dude.
Well, I like both of my next movies pretty much evenly.
I was going to say and do them alphabetically, but they both start with D.
I know. Very different reasons, though. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to instead start with... I am going to do it alphabetically, actually. I'm going to start with Dark City.
Okie doke.
And Dark City is... It is a great fable-like kind of mishmash of so many elements and time frames all thrown together in a place that is always dark.
And in a way also ever-changing. It kind of reminds you almost of Arcadia.
Yeah.
Like dark it's Arcadia.
It is actually just like Arcadia. Arcadia would be that dark.
Dark Arcadia, i.e. it's Dark City. You know, it's the... Arcadia did experience seasons and sun and light, but this is, I'm talking not aesthetically, I'm talking like physically.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like nighttime dark. We're not talking like spooky dark. We mean nighttime dark. Sorry.
Right. Right. And that is, it is phenomenal for that. And there are, the main character goes through this amazing awakening to what is going on around him. And the fact that no one believes him. Except for one person who is helping them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's not really a spoiler because that's pretty early on in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
As in, like, the first, I think it's actually technically the second scene of the movie.
Yep.
Is where you meet this guy. And it is so good. But it hits a lot of those fantasy-like tropes.
Mm-hmm.
That is why I like to classify it as a fantasy. Yeah. Because it's science fiction-y.
Well, it's fantasy set in space.
Yeah.
The thing is that there's technology and abilities, but we're just asked to buy into it for the aesthetic of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like technology. It's you know, everyone's using it and it's mundane. It's the stuff that's going on, that technology and magic kind of thing are what make it kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very good at creating a lot of the, if you want to do anything, especially like dark fairy tales or a lot of World of Darkness games work really well because it has that timelessness to the buildings and everything that you kind of want to have in those World of Darkness type games. Like you want to have where the setting, the city itself is such a, it's just a backdrop to what's really going on. And that amazing character interplay that happens in games like, you know, Changeling or Vampire. The city is just that backdrop behind it. And
in a way, the city's a character.
Well, in this it is.
Yeah. But in a lot of it, it's just...
But it's a changing character that always feels off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way to kind of peel that part, you know, and look at the characters themselves without the city. Because you can actually look at the city as its own character, but you see that interplay, and it's a great reflection of that. And I really like how well it does that element. So.
I agree. I have to agree. It's a damn.
All right. So what do you got next?
All right. I'm going to go Kubo of the Two Strings.
Okay.
All right. And here's the cool thing that, I love kind of fairy tale-esque stories. Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty, they're a little overdone, but I love those kinds of stories, the myths. And Kubo of the Two Strings is about, it's about a boy who has the magical ability of playing his instrument, and it causes just magical origami is the best way to describe it. And he can animate these pieces, and it's beautiful. And it's one interesting how he's actually able to tie the music, just the intensity and how what he's playing actually ties into what he's doing and how they animated it. And it was beautifully done. It was this really cool stop motion-esque, come on, with a little bit of CGI. And the thing is that I loved the story, and pretty much is he's never allowed to go out at night because the moon will see him, and then the moon will come to take him away and bring him back to the moon. You can tell this definitely has a lot of Japanese influence. And here's the thing that was kind of cool and one of the reasons I like it. If you think about it in a way, it's a sequel to a story way back. There's a tale of the Moon Princess Kaguya, and Studio Ghibli put out a movie about it where a young girl is pretty much a bamboo harvester is chopping bamboo one day and finds a little girl, a little baby inside a bamboo shoot. So him and his wife take her in and they start raising her, and they get money. Every time he was chopping out bamboo, he would get money. He would get gold pieces so they could raise her. So they raise her as a princess because that they thought that's what she deserved. And so she's being trained for court and all this other things. And pretty much, unfortunately, it ends very tragically, where she calls out.
Japanese myth do.
Well, not all of them, but she calls out because. There are all these suitors, and they won't leave her alone. She just wants to go and enjoy life and live life on Earth. But they won't stop hounding her, and in her desperation, she calls out to the moon to save her. The problem is, when they do, they put a cloak around her, a cloak of feathers, and she forgets everything about the Earth and goes back. Now, when you're watching Kubo, the monsters, the main character, the main character's mom, you know, two people start hunting her, and they're wearing cloaks of feathers.
Oh, nice.
And there's all these little allusions to bits of that story. Like the Moon Kingdom, it's very cold, and it's very, you know, they don't see a lot of lack of a better term, the warmth and the life that is on Earth. So, and I know that's right. I watched it right before watching Kubo. And this is the reason I love Kubo. Just blew me away, and I didn't put two and two together. I had watched a piece on YouTube by Gaijin Goomba saying Kubo is a sequel, and I realized that's why I really liked it, because I picked up on this, at least subconsciously, that nice. one You know, so you find out all these really cool things, and I'm not going to spoil more of the story, but if you watch, and then there's bits also, like, the monsters that they're talking about, that they bring up, all these crazy, crazy they're actual Japanese monsters. The ceremonies. And the thing is, I actually found this cool with Gaijin Goomba when I was watching his stuff. It's like, he could actually go and tell by watching the dances, oh, this is in this area of Japan. And it's actually correct. And the music was right. I'm like, holy cow.
That's cool.
You know, yes, we all understand this. Yes, it was in a way very much kind of whitewashed in certain things, but in other ways, not. You know, yes, the main characters. But it's like, to actually go and make sure that the outfits and the headpieces were right, and, you know, the moves were proper. I'm like, they might have screwed up a couple things, but they did some great things right. And the ending music, I'm going to spoil it right now, but you're hearing While My Guitar Gently Weeps on an Onsen. It is one of the most amazing things I have heard. Sorry, I rambled a bit there.
No, that's okay.
Go for it. Hit the last one. Scare us.
So my last one is The Descent.
And we're not talking about, you know, the board game, guys. This is a movie.
No, it is a movie. And it is, there's some very interesting elements of the movie. Number one, all of the cast, I can't mm-hmm. say actors because they're not. They're all actresses. It's all women.
Okay.
The entire cast. Except for the things that they find.
Oh.
There is only one male in the entire movie that they show, and it is the dead husband of one of these women. Other than that, all of the characters are female, and they're all not, it's all not like, oh, we need help. You know, it's none of that. All of these women are very strong female leads. Like, they could, any one of them. And the story is great. It's exploration and finding the unknown in something very common. Because The Descent is about going into a cave system, and they're lured there by one of the women who is like, we're going to go and do this regular, you know, rock climbing thing. Because they're all like, kind of like extreme sports girls, like all of them are. And they go and do spelunking this one time, and they're like, wouldn't it be cool if we, you know, ever found a place that nobody had ever found before? And they happen to be in that. And the environment is just as much against them as anything else.
Ooh.
Well, as soon as they get kind of in it, they have a cave-in where they can't get out. And that's when they find out that they're not alone in there.
Ooh.
Now, what the things are that are in there, I'm not going to say. And if you see it, watch the director's cut. Don't watch the theatrical release. I feel like the end of the director's cut is way more powerful than anything that the regular theatrical release, because they, I believe it's a English movie, so it was originally shot with English sensibilities about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was played in America, Americans were like, what? We need to know what happened. So they kind of hobbled together an ending that American audiences could connect with. Yeah. And I think that it actually did a disservice to the rest of the story that had been told. And it is a horror movie. I mean, it's It is creepy. It's super claustrophobic, like the whole thing. And it's supposed to be. And it is so good, though. And I'm getting ready to... I just started my Underdark campaign. So it is something that my players hate me, I think. Because things like this come up in the game.
Nice.
Or they will. Because they never know what they're going to run into. So.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah. It's a good movie. And... It is horror, though, so be ready for that.
Oh, yeah.
So
nice.
All right, now you bring us in.
All right, this, to be honest, I don't even know what genre to put it in, but I have The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. Thank you, Gilliam.
So fun.
It's probably one of the most amazing, unique... It has like a whole bunch of dudes from Monty Python, of course. Robin Williams is in it as his soul. And it's probably one of the most interesting movies, because when you first start out, there's a bunch of people in a stage house, and you're watching them doing a play on The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, and there's a war going on outside. And things get weirder from there.
Yeah.
You know, there's travels and adventures all over the place. And the thing is, they steal, and I mean right out steal, from a whole bunch of just like Grimm's fairy tales and, you know, like a lot of, yeah. Like
A game called The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Oh, really?
Yes. And it is basically you get a bunch of people to sit around. It's telling tall tales.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about who can tell the better tall tale of how the Baron Munchausen did this thing, whatever that thing is.
Okay.
And you basically sit around. Like, part of the game is having dinner, having drinks, and telling tall tales.
I had no idea that existed.
Yes.
And the thing is, though, it's like Baron Munchausen was a real world person, you know, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they go and, you know, the movies. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's all about tall tales.
But the thing is, though, that all these crazy tall tales are, you know, they're so beautifully presented, and the actors that play all these different roles are phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, like, for me, though, like, when they did the, I think it was the seven, it was, a, there was a fairy tale about, it was like seven, there was a seven great heroes. There was one guy who could strong. It was the strongest man. One guy who was a sharpshooter, and it was just. And they took all those archetypes and they brought them into this story. And I remember reading that fairy tale as a little kid.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great. And I'm like, oh my God! And because I knew it, and you know, when I first saw this movie, I was a little bit younger. I felt really cool and clever. And I remember, but then how they took all those characters and they put them out throughout the rest of the film was great.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, it keeps that fantastic tall tale thing going even until the end. It doesn't stop. Even almost as the credits roll, you're still like, wait a minute. Yeah. So
there's another great one for that tall tale adventures.
Yeah.
And that's Big Fish.
Yes.
That's what it always reminds me of, is those two are very similar in that regard.
Yep.
So
yeah. We didn't spend too long on them.
No, I think we hit the high points. I mean,
yeah.
Valerian is going to be one that it's like, I want to talk about it so much, but you can't.
As soon as it leaves the theaters and we all get time to watch it, then we'll revisit it. And we will put warning spoilers before we start talking.
We will. We will. Because it is that good. It needs to have its own show.
Absolutely. Or at least maybe...
a chunk of a show.
Yes.
Yeah. You know,
we'll figure it out. It'll be fun.
Yes. Yes, it will. So, okay. Now, normally we would transition into our fun stat block section. So let's go ahead and... And now we enter stat blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight. All right, so I am a horrible person. I got nothing.
Well, I was a horrible person last time, so I got something this time.
Okay.
All right, all right. So
I had a lot of other things happen today that needed...
I think hydration, I think, was in first order, though, don't you think?
That was part of it, but I also had an hour-long conversation right before this show that we recorded. And then the hour before that, I had another one. So.
You should take up drinking. It's less stressful.
Nah, I love being on the internet and talking with people. So
oh, yeah.
It's all good.
But still.
All right. So what do you got for us?
Okay. Today I have La Pistola del Diablo. La Pistola del Diablo, the most feared gun ever, Smith. This infamous six-shooter has a long and bloody history. It's been used as a tool of law and a tool of anarchy, of justice and of murder. But no matter who uses this weapon and who is the unlucky sod on the receiving end of a lead slug, there were only two winners. Legend says this weapon is the result of a pact between devil and death. Those holding the pistol could hear the devil's whisper, tempting them down an easy path, corrupting their good intentions. You know what they say about the road to hell and intentions, right? So the devil could keep filling the pits of hell with sinners. And what did death get out of the deal? Well, those souls that weren't damned were given over to death. Innocent victims with any venial sin on their soul were given over to death, forever denied access to heaven. So death's domain swelled, and the devil's domain swelled, and heaven started losing numbers. The weapon initially gained infamy during the time of the Civil War. It was a standard practice to take the weapons off of fallen soldiers. So this gun passed from hand to hand, from Billy Yank to Johnny Reb, and in the time of Manifest Destiny saw its corruption spread further. The gun passed from the pioneers to the native people, from mine owners to railroad workers, and more. So be careful out there. Be sure to go to confession regularly, and never take a gun from a fallen foe. To do so is to risk your soul. Buenos noches, pistolero.
Fun. That's fun.
Really?
Yeah. I could see that. God, you could even use that in like a Pathfinder game because there's gunslingers and stuff.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like it's one of the classes. It's like early guns. I mean, they're not great, but they do have them. So yeah, that's totally something you could throw into even that. So
oh, thanks.
Yeah, that's really fun. That is a lot of fun. Well, all right. Since I said already I got nothing, we're going to jump into our next segment, Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary. All right. So our lexicon word for today is hoary, which is an adjective. Do you happen to know what this one means?
I remember I remember the Weeping Angels being described as hoary, but I don't know what it meant. Don't know what it meant. Tense.
It is gray or white with or as if with age or extremely old. Now, its first known official use as the word hoary is from 1530. Now, the word actually dates much, much older than that. It's originally a Old English.
Okay.
I think the first use was found in Beowulf. And then it underwent change over time. But the first word, which I think was whore, came from Beowulf. That's where it was first found. So, yeah.
Spiffy!
Yeah. Yep. But it's one of those, it's an old word that has undergone some weird changes since Merriam-Webster has changed their thing. The actual etymology is no longer present on the website, at least not for this word. So I just happened to dig a little bit and found that it had come from another word in Beowulf. So
gotcha.
Yep. So, all right, well, let's go ahead and close this bad boy down. What do you got to talk about?
Well, okay, Zen, you've seen the tattoo on the back of my right leg, the big sword?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it's from a video game called Transistor, which is done by Supergiant Games. Well, okay. A new game by that company just released yesterday. It's called Pyre. One, the soundtrack and the visual aesthetics, holy moly, are amazing. Supergiant Games has put out amazing games. The story's always good. The music is phenomenal. They've done Bastion. They did Transistor. Now they're doing Pyre. Pyre is a game where you have been banished from this town, and you have, because you actually know how to read, you now found a way to atone and get back let in, and it's called going through the rites. And as you do it, the sigil in the sky forms, which is, if you look at the symbol, I'm like, yep. I'm like, I already have to do the Kale Hammer for Bastion as a tattoo, and I'm going to have to get the Pyre sigil as well, because the game kicked me right in the feels, and I'm bawling my eyes out. The thing is, like, and the gameplay, it's weird. It's almost, best way to describe it is Magic 3-on-3 basketball with a hell of a lot of unique and snarky commentary at the same time.
Oh, cool.
It's beautifully done. I love it. I love how it's done. It's just, it's going to take a bit for me to get used to it, at least the game mechanics, but the story is just ripping my heart out. I love it.
Nice. Those are always the best.
So what do you got?
Well, I don't think I've talked about this program before, but it is for those who enjoy world building and like maps, this is a way to actually do them through your web browser. And you can draw your own. And it's still in beta. It's been in beta for, probably a year now. They're still monkeying with it.
Dang.
And they're constantly adding things to it. It's really cool. But it allows you to create maps that you can then print out and use.
Oh, I love that.
And you can do, the website says that you can do like top-down dungeons, you can do continental maps, all of that. I've had a lot of trouble getting it to do anything other than the continental maps. at least easily. And it may just be that it's something that, like,
it could be, it could still be unloaded
all the way yet. Like, it's somebody that's like, once it's paid for or whatever, you know, like, I don't know if they're going to turn it into a pay service or what, but I know that there is a way that you should be able to unlock more things. Mm-hmm. I just haven't been able to yet.
Yep.
But it looks really, I played around with it. The sad part was, is that I wanted to use my tablet to draw on that, because that's why I bought it. Was, I mean, I also don't have a really expensive tablet. I have a really cheap tablet, but I figured this could be a way that I could use it to do my continental map for my game setting. And it's not working real well with that. So I have to use a mouse, and obviously you're talking about using a mouse to draw with, and it never works out quite right because I have a trackball. So it doesn't really like that, but it's really cool, and you can build layers to it, sort of. I think it's going to become a really useful tool because they're already trying to, well, they've already put together if you are a company and you want to use this product, you can. And if you're just like a small guy, like that does a couple of products a year, hey, you can pay for a license and it's only $25. And you can use all the maps that you create using their software. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
To be able to do that. So I'm going to play with it more and see if I can't get my tablet to actually work with it. If not, then I'm going to have to go back to the old staple of using Photoshop and all these other plugins, add-ons, and brushes and everything else to get the effects that I want. So, but yeah, it would be much easier if I could just use my tablet on this. So, but yeah, it's pretty cool. And I've played with it a little bit and I like it. I want to see what else they come up with since they're still technically in the beta. So.
Here's hoping. So, and before we go, I just want to do a small shout out to one of my good buddies, Mark. He has just started listening to the podcast and has gotten a kick out of our stat blocks and loves the term doobly-doo. So I am hoping this terminology will spread far and wide. So
it probably will.
I love you, Mark.
But yeah, speaking of which, if he wants to talk to us about anything, he, you know, me particularly, or anybody else that listens to it, you can go to our Facebook group and sign up, which it's at facebook.com/groups/seizethegm. And we've also got a Patreon, which is...
And Twitter.
Patreon.com/seizethegmpodcast. So...
And Twitter the other at seizethegm, so...
I was going to say, the other ones are all in the outro, so, which we're getting ready to hit right now. So until next time, folks, it has been a blast, and we will see you guys soon.
Bye!
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zendead,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at SeizeTheGM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zendead@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is applied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by The Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0, Unported License.